Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hi, Diana Frike here, and I am the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Really quick, this episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Key, and other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, wellness, beverage, and fitness industries. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, that's easy to say, give us a call and let's talk. You can find out more information at retail-voodoo.com or email info@retailvoodoo.com to learn more. Now, before introducing today's guests, I want to give a big thank you to Ms. Jessica Windell for making this connection. Jessica Windell is the founder of Maven Consulting, a strategic communications and public relations consultancy working with consumer brands. To learn more about them and how they can help you in your business, you can check them out at www.mavenconsultingco.com. Don't forget that CO there, MAVENCONSULTINGCO.com. All right. Well, our guest today is Mae Steigler, who serves as CEO of Organifi, maker of premium, great tasting adaptogenic blends. Responsible for the brand's overall alignment, Mae is driven by her passion and responsibility for the development of Organifi's people and processes, having played a key role in building the company since its inception in 2014 to an average growth of 60% CAGR year over year since inception. That's the first time I've done CAGRs in an intro, so you get a first prize for that, Mae. With Mae's leadership, Organifi has been named one of Inc.'s 5,000 fastest growing companies 4 times and awarded Forbes Great Places to Work for the last 3 years. Well, hello, Mae. How are you?
Diana, so good. Thank you for having me here. I so appreciate it. And a huge thank you to Jess as well. You go back almost 10 years now and have amazing gratitude for that powerhouse woman.
Mm-hmm. I would say that she and I are kindred spirits when it comes to work ethic. And it sounds like you're in that same kind of club.
I take that as a huge compliment knowing Jess. So thank you for that. I can't imagine keeping up with her.
Oh my goodness.
It's wonderful to be here, Diana. So thank you very much.
Of course. Mae, where are you located today?
I'm in San Diego. I've been here for about 10 years, right on the water. Absolutely love it in San Diego. That's where we're headquartered at Organifi as well.
Okay. That sounds amazing. And I was born in Santa Monica, which is not close to San Diego per se,
but
closer
far.
Than Seattle, right? Yeah. And what I remember is just, it feels more like a community there than really a city or a town.
I think that's what has me enjoy it so much. It doesn't feel like the big city that it kind of is. It feels much smaller, lots of small communities. So definitely didn't grow up in a big city. So this feels like the big city I can handle.
I love it. Well, let's talk about Organifi here. I always like it when brand owners and leaders get to tell us about their brand. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Organifi and why it exists?
Love it. Organifi really exists and was born out of the idea that healthy can be delicious and can be easy and enjoyable. So I think really importantly, recognizing, there it is, green juice right there,
right
our first product. We came from building basically a community of individuals that were looking to transform their health through the power of real foods, through juicing. And mm-hmm. it was really hard to juice. I don't know, 10 years ago, if anyone remembers buying a juicer and trying on, you know, getting it set up in the kitchen and then all the grocery shopping and then the washing and the prepping, even like the room in your refrigerator to store the vegetables.
Oh my goodness.
It was really tough. So
yes.
Prior to founding Organifi, we were running a educational company around the power of real foods and juicing. And so it's really, the brand was created with the idea that this has to be easier. This gets to be more fun, and it's still such an important transformation tool in deriving great methodology to bring, you know, adaptogens and superfoods into your diet.
Well, thank you. You know, I was looking at your, you are muted. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. So thank you for that. I wonder if you could share a little bit about your journey to becoming CEO of Organifi. I'm completely fascinated by this farm life through fit life to building a multi-million dollar nutrition company. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's a longer story, so I'll
about two sentences, you know, could you do that?
Yeah. Well, it's a wild adventure.
Yes. Tell us. Tell us the highs.
Yes. Growing up, I grew up in Northern California on, kind of like a farm. It was 40 acres. Both my parents are horticulturalists and botanists. So we had gardens, ate from the garden, thought that was pretty normal. Normal people, you know, grow food in their garden and have that incorporated in their upbringing. I actually, you know, was craving Eggo waffles and
of course,
and Applejack cereal and hoping to go to fast food one day as a child, I remember. But of course, reflecting now, I have a ton of gratitude for that. But in college, I actually studied animal nutrition and was very focused on the food system and really wanted to solve animal welfare issues and thinking there has to be a better way, and got heavily involved in agriculture. I went to Cal Poly and big focus and hands-on learning in kind of food systems in general, and went into R&D in that space. And, you know, I kind of laugh now in reflection, but I would have been disowned by my parents. I almost worked for Monsanto. my parents known, it would have obviously broken up the family potentially, only because they were really involved in the early organic movement, CCOF, and obviously growing our own food growing up was a big deal. So that kind of felt like the opposite. As I was at farm level, though, I really got to recognize that so much of the impact of what we were feeding animals. I was actually there to do early diagnosis of illness and prevention of overuse and antibiotics with the dairy industry. So I was working very much like doing research and development, trying to early diagnose mastitis and pneumonia based on actually improper nutrition. And so it was a really, really clear through essentially animal health, a clear example of when we don't eat what our bodies are designed to consume.
Yes.
That results in disease.
Yes.
And while I was trying to solve for that, I recognized that the larger issue was actually consumer demand for this food system. And it was, you know, this dysfunctional food system that we were as consumers demanding. And so I realized I was solving the wrong problem. So I went back and studied human health, and I got involved in personal training and coaching. And that's really when I met Drew, the founder of, at the time, FitLife TV, the educational company before Organifi, 2011-ish, 2010. And we started working together and designing basically coaching for whether it's companies, relations like corporate wellness, and individual coaching for really empowering people to use real foods to transform their health. And that was Drew's journey. He was really, has an incredible origin story in transforming his own health with the power of real foods. And we are coaching people how to do that. And so again, kind of collapsing this storyline, I was involved as employee number one, essentially pre-Organifi, and was able to build, build our company to this point in growing the team and designing really opportunities for customers from the very early stages. And there's a ton of obviously story in a lot of that, but started really connected with our customer and coaching program. So translated my animal nutrition information and knowledge and education to human health, and then into coaching programs, and then into basically team building around that solution.
So fascinating.
unconventional for sure.
It's unconventional, but you know what I love about it is my business partner and I were working together. And I mentioned before we started our call together was that we started working together in 2006. And when we changed from generalist into Better For You Foods, or at the time we said we were in naturals and organics, we made that choice based off of what was happening with his, with my business partner's oldest son's health. He had gone through several years of just being chronically ill, and we removed a couple of foods from his diet that were just what we would say are industrialized products now. And by removing those elements, went from being sick in an antibiotics almost on a quarterly basis to not being ill for 3 years. And
wow.
And the two of us said, we want to, at the time, 2011, naturals industry was growing, but it was definitely not what it was now. It was still kind of not mainstream. And we said, let's take our multinational CPG, big company expertise on brand building and bring it to these other brands so that we can mainstream this concept of food as medicine for the body, or not medicine per se. I mean, it's kind of overly simplifying it, but you know, yeah. If you eat closer to the original food format, chances are you're going to have a much healthier diet. Some people are not affected by it, but there are many who are. And we just don't have the education quite there yet. So that is so interesting to see that parallel, because the timeline is about the same, that 2011 mark.
Yeah. And so powerful to just have that example of mm-hmm. what's possible, right? Mm-hmm. When we give our bodies what it naturally needs. Again, we mm-hmm. have like, you know, the most incredible human capacity to mm-hmm. maintain homeostasis and health, right? Mm-hmm. That baseline of healthy living. And firmly believe whether it's, you know, something the body can't tolerate or not. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting if you start with the approach of removing the inflammatory foods in your diet, the things exactly. that while you can tolerate and your body's handling, mm-hmm. what would it, you know, what would your state of health, energy, you know, recovery look like if you remove yeah. them? And then
exactly.
And it's that huge space in between, you know, there's lots of like performance optimizers and, mm-hmm. you know, people living the biohacking like best life, but there's this huge space for just the everyday human yes. to say, what would it look like if I had better energy or more yeah. energy, didn't have, you know, maybe bloating or an upset stomach most right. days, right? We mm-hmm. think these things are normal, but when we start taking a closer look at our individual nutrition, it's amazing what our state of health can elevate to.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so as you mentioned before, Organifi, you had some roles in R&D and fitness education and training. In the role that you're in now, you've been in kind of CXO roles or C-suite. Do you feel like which of these, like from a fitness and education, fitness training standpoint, do you feel those roles were like literally integral to your leadership success?
I do. I feel that in, and kind of even coming back to that first question, arriving in this role, mm-hmm. having been able to sit in those seats and or build out those roles themselves mm-hmm. had equipped me to be in this seat better for sure. Mm-hmm. So I feel like unconventionally, no, I didn't go to school for this. and I think, you know, often looking at balancing even my, my own perception of qualification for this seat. Mm-hmm. And what I continue to lean on is the fact that I've been in that seat prior and mm-hmm. or built that capacity in the business prior. Mm-hmm. And so it's just the historical experience. Mm-hmm. And so many of them, yes, have played into me being able to have the context to continue building the company in the direction yeah. that we want to go.
Yeah.
Yes. And the balancing effect that I get to do consistently is ensuring that that historical lens isn't mm-hmm. the only lens, and really looking at how yep. can I bring in, you know, talent and resources and mentorship in areas that certainly the company hasn't been experienced yet in, and even our internal team isn't already bringing that in. So yeah. it's been a really interesting balancing experience in both of those, leaning heavy on historical, but it's been so insular. So I think it's that balance for sure.
Mm-hmm. Were there any foundational skills or philosophies from that time that you still leverage on a regular basis, or is it all kind of mushed together, kind of hard to pull apart?
Well, I like the practice of pulling it apart whenever I can. There's always a lot of learning to be had in that. And foundational, and as I kind of spoke to, is being at least in the role long enough to understand what success criteria can be before bringing on a consultant, before bringing on a true internal hire. And so we often built that way. So we're self-funded. You know, we didn't have a bunch of capital to kind of grow on. We built the business in the way that we knew how and best to serve the customers. And so in doing that, it really applied this kind of beautiful constraint to how we grew, and very much looking at industry examples that we could, and building our best, you know, best version of that internally, and then hiring, you know, again, contractors or consultants, and then bringing in house.
Interesting. So,
yeah. And that was a pretty clear format for us to grow from. And I think the challenge when we didn't do that was if we went right to consultants or even hiring in a talent that we didn't actually know how to manage and we didn't know enough about, it made it really hard for us to know if we were successful or not.
Interesting. Yeah. Because I think many people with lots of experience and no experience really feel like financial acumen or really solid sales skills alone kind of define a company or a brand's ability to grow, kind of especially in those early stages, right? And my experience has seen that it's really team leadership and team building and development that is the essential part of leading growth and having success in a brand. And so I think you answered this, but I'll ask it from a different way. You know, when you moved from a director role into a C-suite, how did you go about building and growing your teams? Was it literally the approach that you said, where I just sit and I look at best case scenarios, or were there other elements from your coaching and your education background that you kind of brought in to round it out?
Yeah, I do think what served us well, and as we grew teams, a key approach has always been strengths-based recruiting. So we were always looking at bringing in someone who was, yes, aligned with the direction of the company, but also like it was part of their reason for being that they wanted to develop into a seat. So we always, and we still do in the recruiting process, connect with, you know, ikigai, right? The reason for waking up in the morning. And it's a long tail for our connection with longevity and health too. So we kind of map it back to the company vision and mission. But that was a really key part in bringing on people that, you know, yes, we built out of kind of necessity the roles. And in the early stages, when it was just, you know, five people, we were building seats because when we saw the room to grow there and we could meet customers in those new channels, let's say it was like really early days podcast sponsorship or really early days influence marketing, we were trying it on to see if it would work. And when it gained enough traction at the time, really early, maybe it was like 10,000 a month in revenue or, you know, in customer impact, then we'd say, great, let's bring on someone who's not only great in this seat, but also loves it and wants to do this. So then we'd apply that lens to building the seats out at that point, really specifically, and bringing on people that saw it better than we did at that point. So as we had enough experience in those seats to at least know, hey, we're hiring up, right? We're bringing on people that have higher capacity than we do in those roles. It definitely created, and I think another area that I often am cognizant of is being a generalist, and it, you know, knowing enough about enough is also kind of dangerous. And so it has me really, and making sure that that's serving the company, where I really can be clear that here is the limitation of my knowledge in this space, and bringing in experts when we need to. And I definitely in the last 10 years have hit points where I had to really recognize and come to terms with the limiting belief that, you know, I didn't have the background and education that most people we hired had, right? And the expertise, right? And getting to overcome whether it's, you know, imposter syndrome and all the things that people have to kind of get through, but doing it for the right reasons, not to kind of hide and cover with, you know, talent and pretend I know all the things. I really, you know, we can't know all the things, especially as the business, as it's grown as fast as it has, we're always at a new stage. Right. And, you know, we've never been a $60 million company. We've never been, you know, at this stage, even looking at omnichannel. So anyways, it's definitely been a learning and continues to be a really important learning stage for myself.
That's really awesome. And a lot of self-awareness happening.
There's no such thing as too much of that.
Well, especially when you're in the leader, when you're in the hot seat, absolute self-awareness is critical, critical. Yeah. It's so funny. I had heard about Ikigai, speaking of, for the first time when I interviewed Jennifer Norman almost 2 years ago. I don't know if you know who she is. She has a beauty brand out of SoCal called the Human Beauty Movement. And she built all of her positioning based off of the concept of Ikigai. So that was our podcast. So I might send you the link after if you want to listen to her. She's pretty fantastic.
I would absolutely love to listen to that. Thank you. Yeah. You know, you hope that in this lifetime, right, we get to live into that and connect our career and kind of, you know, even speaking into where you guys shifted focus from general to more specific and being really clear on the contribution you're here to make and ensuring that the work you're doing is connecting to that, because that contribution loop is one, well researched for longevity, but just is so key as human beings here, right? Yeah. We have a lot of choices.
Yes.
You know, keep them aligned for what lights you up and brings you to life for sure.
Well, and as you were talking about learning those things, learning where you end, where your team begins, and what your role is in shaping their paths, not just your path, I know that there's, in some way, there's some visibility on like, well, maybe there isn't, I don't know, but this concept of your brand sustainability, meaning how are you setting up the brand for growth when you can't be in the hot seat, whether it's 10 years from now or you step out and there's an emergency or crisis? Like how are you setting that up? How are you empowering your team to be sustainable regardless of how you can contribute on a given day?
It's definitely something that we continue to work at. And I think with a lot of these things, it's like, hey, you know, developing team, like you're never going to stop developing team, right? But this spot in particular is really interesting to continue to look at. And I think a big part of it is, of course, decision criteria, decision framework. We're definitely in a phase of reteaching that and ensuring that there's enough transparency in what are the key business, you know, kind of what makes the business run, and can we ensure that the leadership team, the directors or VPs are clear on that so that they're able to make sound decisions. I think the indicator that we don't have it right is anytime a lot of decisions are being escalated, right? Oh, we haven't empowered the team to have even as simple as, you know, autonomy given via budgets and decision-making. Hey, if it's less than $50,000, it's your decision and we'll review it every month. Right. And go back and learn together if something was, and maybe it's 10,000 or maybe it's $100, whatever it needs to be. Right. whatever that needs to be.
Yeah.
But I think that speaks to the sustainability and building teams is one, imparting decision-making frameworks so that the team can begin to think like me and ideally better, right? Because they've got more context and details. And oftentimes I find that we're at different stages in the business, absolutely needing to redesign those and re-engineer those frameworks. And so much of this also has to do with the ability to take the time to review, like reflect on decisions made and make better ones going forward. And that's where I still see a lot of opportunity there for our team to do that well and together. So how are we learning together so that that strategy that we're going towards is executable by the leadership team, not by my directing.
Yes. I love it.
So a couple of parts there for sure. And I think a lot of that is coaching, you know, training and development time with team, which is such an investment and so important. And then frameworks and kind of like more operational flow, rhythms, right? Which is review and planning.
Okay. Wonderful. Oh, and then, so speaking of leadership sustainability, we have to still have to ask this question because we are still in the COVID. I wonder if you brought anything, any new tools to your, you know, to your toolkit. I don't know. I use these weird representative terms, but during COVID, what did you bring new to how you manage teams, or did you? Was it just kind of doubling down on what you're already doing?
I think it's a lot of, it's both, right? So we were highly hybrid. So we had great HQ in San Diego. Mm-hmm. We sublet it. And so we were able to transition the team fully remote. And it was always, we never had like 9 to 5 hours. You know, we didn't have any of that kind of framework we had to move away from. So in many ways, the transition was easy. The really important thing though that kept our focus and still does is culture and interaction with the team. So we always had an HQ where team members could visit, but our internal team and our local team is the majority of the company. And
gotcha.
Really thrived with we do a lot of in-person events. We mm-hmm. do a lot of workshops. We do a ton of weekly, there's, you know, a schedule of events that happens. And we did need to transition that fully to online. Mm-hmm. And it really helped in some ways bridge our already remote culture, but then challenged our local in-person culture.
Got it.
So yeah. It kind of forced the homogenization of those two, which undoubtedly was hard. You know, we kind of had to normalize the expectations across the team. And truly, the remote team, I do think, benefited a lot. And the local team felt like it was less than, which was challenging to balance. So the tools we brought in, bringing everything onto Zoom and online, wasn't a huge stretch for us because mm-hmm. we already did hybridized Zoom every day on the daily huddle. We mm-hmm. just all did it in a room with the remote team. So then we didn't have the room anymore. And there was a pretty big adaptation phase for things like morning meditation, things like book club, things like Heart Talk, which is more like a Toastmasters thing we do every week, but we still did them. So I think what was interesting and the tool was more of a competency of resilience and perseverance to figure out how we adapt. And so I wouldn't say it was a cool software we plugged in. It's like a bunch of stuff failed and it was horrible, but the persistence to say, hey, we know how good it was. How do we recognize it won't be that way, but how do we create that same caliber? And, and now again, we're hybridizing, which is like, you know, doing pickleball tournaments once a month or something, or doing a potluck. You know, just to kind of bring that back, we're flying a couple of team members in, and we do that on a more regular basis, just mm-hmm. recognizing how important that connect is. So zooming out, if we looked at the transition, one, we were super lucky as a brand that it wasn't a big stretch for us. And I'm really grateful that we had so much capacity to just be fully digital and online, mm-hmm. and our team didn't depend on office space. Mm-hmm. And we even moved a full call center online, like, you know, in a week. So really grateful for what felt like easy. And then I'm still so curious and as kind of like what this is going to make possible for mm-hmm. new work. We were already on the edge of like, just kind of disruptive. Like we don't believe in conventional formats, but I do think we really get to try those on now in a really big way and prove out what's helpful for, you know, way more broad, sweeping corporate management.
Mm. Wow. Fabulous. That's, you guys are just kind of you were already kind of evolving before COVID. So COVID might have accelerated a few things, but that seems like a natural to your culture to be adapting it in any given time.
And I mean, thank you. I will say, I think we just never kind of conformed to the conventional, and it wasn't by like, hey, we're really cool by design at all.
We just
were unconventional because I don't think we knew better. So, you know, I want to offer that too. I think we got to lean heavier on kind of the weirdness, and we kind of like, you know, kind of woo woo culture of just mm-hmm. like, this is who we are. We're going to try to lean heavy on it instead.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And balance. I think the other side really quick, I will mention is, we did open up a lot more conversations and check-ins with our teams because there was a lot more stress, a lot more change, a lot more. So we did, and we still now lean heavy on that, which is just like where we used to be able to do a huddle in the office. We do now more video huddles. It was like, hey, check in, this event happened. you know, whether we're transitioning team members, whether, you know, even division changes, we just bring the full company together and say, hey, let's talk about this. So it feels much more open despite being virtual.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it sounds like it's working.
I mean, I think, yes. And, you know, good question is like, how do you know it's working? I think the level of participation and just leaning in that the team offers is always the indication I'm looking for, and kind of, I guess, pressure testing against to say, hey, is this working? Are team members willing to resolve hard spots? Are they willing to show up to the conversations? And myself as well, right? Am I willing to keep leaning in, right, when things are challenging?
Yeah.
I get to keep looking at, is that working as we evolve and over even like culture, performance surveys and all kinds of stuff, you know, we're always looking at how can we balance the metrics within the feeling of the culture and the company.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally understand that. Wow. Well, looking back on the path of Organifi to date, what are you most proud of? I know it's very hard to find a single moment, but when you're thinking in this 1 second, what is it that you celebrate?
I really celebrate, and the thing that if I looked at like the legacy of this company for me personally, there's two standouts. And I think the first being choosing the aspirational lane to speak to and showcase, hey, it is possible to enjoy healthy living. Mm-hmm. When we were in this era of marketing, a lot of, kind of like fear mongering, kind of in this like era of early, like 10 years ago, especially, but it was much easier to say, you know, lose 10 pounds now.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of saying, here's what's possible if you feel your best. And so I'm really proud of taking that more aspirational approach to really show people how they could feel and to be very much internally focused on demonstrating with our employees. So like, you know, we run challenges, we sponsor personal training, we sponsor, you know, races, we're always living into that. And so I think it's the authenticity with the brand and the aspirational voice and intention we've had. I'm really proud of that. Mm. And second is from the very, very beginning in FitLife days, that was the content company before the educational company for Organifi. We were speaking into the possibility of leaning into organic, right? And that was when, like, you know, organic was still not nothing of what it was today. It was like 30 dozen, clean 15, you know? And so really proud of where the brand's built from those very clear foundations of quality and making that very accessible for people. So we always, in the early days, we're hearing conversations and customers saying, hey, I'd love to eat organic, but it's way too expensive. And, you know, I can't make that work. And so in building the quality product we did, we said, hey, we're going to make everything USDA organic. We're going to set a standard that wasn't even really in the supplement industry, and it hardly is today, which is leveraging basically third-party quality standards to make sure everything that our label says is in the product is always in the product.
Right.
And we did that with USDA Organic. Yeah. And so we've always leaned in on making the aspirational approachable and accessible for customers. And instead of buying a $19 juice every day, you know, we really tried to make that possible with our first product, the greens powder, to say, hey, you can have ashwagandha every day. You can have moringa, chlorella, you know, things that are hard to access.
Yeah.
And today, even still seeing the industry is so much bigger, right? It's so exciting to look at like how huge this wellness space is.
Yeah.
And the, you know, recognizing it's not FDA regulated at all. There isn't really a lot of ability for customers or consumers in the industry to lean on knowing what they're getting. And so starting from that place of using quality standards, it's what we've always elevated the last 7 years building the Organifi brand.
Yeah.
But starting from that place is something I'm really, really proud of. And then even the supply chain side in partnering with vendors and just, you know, industry partners that also do good in the industry, because it's a way of doing business that has a ripple effect, whether they're supporting clean oceans or, you know, social justice, you name it. That's been a really cool way to do good while doing business.
I love that. There's something that you said that I'm so glad I'm going to highlight it for just a moment, because one of the reasons why I started this podcast a couple of years ago was I was seeing the shift of leadership in women with the acceleration of investment capital coming in from tech. I was seeing women being moved out of leadership roles, again, kind of bringing in kind of the traditional old school CPG. And we love our male counterparts, but I was also wanting balance in our community, and was seeing a shift there. Removal of women as money was coming in, and Better For You brands was becoming more and more lucrative. And part of the reason why I was frustrated by that is because it was all about performance and margin for brands. And this Better For You category started out as this kind of holistic hippie culture, and everything was expensive because it was expensive. And now it's expensive because we've kind of set this standard, and there's a little bit of elitism to it. We've got huge margins in these products. And some of this information, messaging, and product really should be filtering down to middle and lower, you know, lower income families. But we've put it so far out of reach, it oftentimes kind of saying, well, I'm sorry, but unless you are in the 1%, I'm not making a product for you. And I really want to applaud the fact that accessibility to a product and a lower price point, whether it's because of the size of your container or just reducing your margins or what have you, allows a new audience, net new audience, number one, I want to say net new audience to your product, but also allows us to democratize healthy living. So I thank you for doing that. That's super important.
Thanks for mentioning that. Food sovereignty and food access, even, you know, health sovereignty in general is such a fascinating spot right now in general. And where we came from is free information, right? We made YouTube videos. It was always like, hey, go buy these very inexpensive vegetables, right? Like, you can transform your health with you know, what's in the grocery store. And really recognizing even that for some communities and demographics is hard, you know?
Yeah.
So what I am very grateful to be bringing back with the team right now is a lot of that educational content. And we definitely took time away from that, kind of building on this bank of education we had we had created at FitLife. And so it's a really exciting chapter for us. And we're very much zooming back into that, recognizing that there is a growing disparity in access and information. And there's, I mean, some really amazing things happening today with organizations supporting, whether it's classes and, and, or even donation-based, there's actually a place that opened just down the street from us that's doing donation-based cooking equipment for families in need, and just supporting with classes and education on how to eat well for, you know, the basics. And I think our education system needs a lot of support in that space. Yeah. And so beyond that, as companies and brands right now, we have this huge opportunity to right-size some of it. And yes, it, of course, donating, and we're partnered with Vitamin Angels, right? Which is the far end of the spectrum. Like, I love that. And what's all the in-between? There's so much more in-between that can be addressed and impact you made there that equally just inspired by a lot of really strong brands today doing well by that.
I love it. Thank you for doing that. Well, what's next for you or the brand?
And I mean, as we're kind of speaking through this interesting chapter of returning to education and content, that's really on the near-term horizon for us, is bringing together these two powerful brands and companies we had made, FitLife TV Content Engine and Organifi Physical Product Powerhouse, and getting to bridge the gap for consumers that can either, as you mentioned, maybe those that can't for now justify even a 15 pack of green juice, the lower quantity servings, but they can start taking action towards their health again.
Absolutely.
Just that reminder of what's available. for mm-hmm. consumers to try on and feel better about that isn't, you know, and I'm not allowed to say this, but it's not pharmaceuticals or is not, you know, something that you're going to have to buy as a solution, but really learning how to work with your body instead.
Yeah.
So bringing back that just intuitive wisdom that we have as human beings, educating on it. So I'm really excited about a content chapter that is coming with Organifi and a lot of the differentiation in the industry to empower consumers to, as we were kind of speaking about, discern quality in the industry. It's, you know, we talk about food not being the same as it used to be 50 years ago.
Yeah.
We talk about glyphosate, you know, Organifi's message is so, so clear above USDA organic. We talk about glyphosate residue free being and so many, such a key area to focus on and how just pesticides are kind of everywhere right now. And so how do you support your body? Mm-hmm. As we talked about avoiding inflammatory factors and compensating most effectively with it. So I'm really excited to lean in on educating consumers just in the industry in general, to your point. And as we do have the opportunity and my goodness, the wonderful opportunity to choose what we put in our bodies. And as we elect health products and better for you products, I'm so glad what you do here, highlighting those, how do we discern what's right for us at this point and focus on not only the best quality, but is it working for our bodies right now? And you know, this is more in my historical experience in the health industry. And as I was a personal trainer for some time as my interim chapter between animal nutrition and Organifi. And the thing that, that we saw happen in that industry and just personal training and coaching industry was there was this large, you know, kind of mass diets and programs phase. And then there was this really beautiful shift to individualization. And I feel like in the industry right now, as you look at telehealth and all these kind of coinciding trends, I'm really excited to be part of and support the individualization of supplementation and just nutritional direction for ultimate health.
I love it. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that manifests. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, May, I am really enjoying our time together. We're kind of wrapping up our time. There's a few questions that I like to ask everybody. This first one might be a tricky one. We'll see if you've got one right. This is the fact. I love it when somebody shares an interesting fact or simply a story of their industry or their brand, the products. And I wonder if you might have something that you can share that's interesting about maybe an ingredient or I'm not sure what.
I love this question. Yes. And I think as I was talking about glyphosate residue free, it's sometimes a tough one to wrap our head around. And essentially just the interesting fact about glyphosate is it originally was a mass antibiotic. So when it first got patented, I know, terrifying. and so kind of the reason why we focus on ensuring and testing for glyphosate residue free in our products is really the scary kind of toxic load of that product that is sprayed. Roundup Ready, right, is one of the key products that includes glyphosate in it, and it's sprayed on the majority of crops, terrifyingly. But originally, it was very much a like non-selective herbicide. Prior to that, is an antibiotic. So as we look at like what goes into our body and our food system, that's just an important call out as we ideally put the highest quality, best things in our body. So look for glyphosate residue free labels. They are, and I think if you go to, there's a couple of certification bodies currently, but detoxproject.com, they have a whole bunch of products that are glyphosate residue free testing. And I think we'll definitely see a lot more of that, similar to how USDA organic continues to grow, but grew in the beginning as well. Scary, but that's a fun fact.
Fun fact. Well, now, I mean, that is great intel for those that are wanting to make that next level choice. Thank you for that. I wonder if there are any women leaders or women rising stars out there in our industry or not that you would like to elevate or admire simply for the work they're doing right now.
You know, a call out, I listened to a podcast with her a couple months back, Sarah Cullen. She's the founder of GEM Nutrition. It's the edible vitamins. What I love about what she's created and what I find inspiring is is finding the spot between true form, like vitamins, right? Which is just like, you know, you're slamming a whole handful of whatever you got, right? And bringing that back to gap nutrition with real foods. Mm-hmm. So I just love the brand she's built, and the mission they're on is really inspiring for sure. Mm-hmm. So it's a woman CEO that I'm, inspired by.
Okay. Gem Nutrition. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. They've been around for a little bit, but they make little bites that are, again, gap nutrition format, supporting in vitamins, the daily vitamin stuff, but
love it.
Interesting stuff over there, and founded for great reasons.
I love it. Wow. Well, we have been talking with May Steigler, CEO of Organifi. May, where can people learn more about you and Organifi?
Thank you. LinkedIn is always a great spot to direct message me, or of course on social at Organifi for our team, and we're always on there. So definitely check out the company at Instagram, Organifi, and LinkedIn, May Steigler.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time today. So happy to have met you finally and to have spent time with you. And I really look forward to seeing this content work. Frankly, I'm very excited about. So very excited to see that. When might we start seeing that work produced?
Definitely, I would say earliest the end of this quarter. So building the team around this now. And it's such a cool time to pull in our R&D team on this and our product team to get a share of that knowledge. We've got such powerhouses on that side. So I'm very excited. But end of the quarter into Q2.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you to our listeners today. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend. Otherwise, I want to thank you all and have a great rest of your day. We'll catch you next time on the Gooder Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.